You're listening to Ambition Without Compromise, the podcast that is planting a flag for women of color who are ready to unapologetically center their unique vision, personal legacy, joy, and wholeness in the pursuit of the next level in their business and careers. I am your host, Monique Shields. I'm an executive coach, entrepreneur, mom, wife, and champion of badass moguls in the making. Let's dive in. Welcome back, my beloved listeners, for another episode. I am just feeling a little bit emotional, but also like pretty clear right now on something that I think is a really important to sort of develop a conversation about and wrap our minds around, which is this concept of wanting things to change, wanting a change, and being changed. There's a little bit of, I think, a setup, and it can just feel hard to access this or to have like to draw up and identify that this is probably what's blocking you, because it's such a huge contributing factor in so many of the coaching conversations that I'm having day in and day out. And I'm also going to be talking about some of the like personal stuff that I've been working through these past, let's call it like month and a half, 2 months in particular, but maybe 3 months, 3-4 months of like a lot of different changes I've been making in my life. But it's one of those things that is simple, but it can be really, really hard. It can be hard to note, to see, and then to actually follow through on. So I want to talk to you about the things that I have learned both through my clients and in my personal experience about when we're desiring change and what's required to actually be changed so that we can experience the change that we want to have. Okay, first, let's talk about career stuff, because this comes up. I think this is like easeful and common to go ahead and dive into. What I hear so, so often, and what I know to be true from my own professional experience, even myself as a business owner, right, is that we so desperately want to feel free, y'all. Like, there's like lots of different words, like a lot of language we'll use around it. Like, I want to feel like more, you know, freedom and flexibility with my time, or I want to feel more ease, or I want to feel lighter. I want to feel more calm. I want to feel more balanced, right? I want like this like harmonious experience of work and life. And like, where can I begin to find that? Or I want to experience more respect. And these scenarios pop up where, let's give an example, you're feeling overrun and unappreciated and undercompensated. Maybe your fees are not where they need to be, or you're actually an employee and the pay is not where you want it to be, but you are enduring it. And you want, air quote, to feel different, to experience something different, right? You want more money, you want more respect, you know, you want to be feeling more valued, and you want to feel at ease as you put forth so much effort day to day in the thing that you do for a living. But it's never going to happen as long as you are still walking into these situations being the same person that you have always been. I'd like to talk a little bit about with motherhood as another area that I personally experienced and have heard a lot of, you know, angst and sadness, honestly, about, where it's just like, I want to be a different kind of mother than maybe I experienced growing up, or that I see most commonly around me in my community, or a different kind of mother than I was last season. I want to be a different kind of mother in this new season with my children, right? Or just a parent in general. And your heart's in the right place. Your desire is clear, but you don't know how to get there. And I can say, like, and you won't get there until you're ready to be changed. And I'm going to talk a lot about what it means to be changed, but I just want to start with some of these areas that come up a lot. This came up for me in particular today. My husband just came home from some travel, and we had this whole conversation, and I got super emotional, and it was about some communication in our marriage. And it's like, I most desire to feel like I am in, and both of us do, like that we are in this like loving, down for each other, ride or die kind of partnership, where we are playmates, we are lovers, we are friends, we are separate individuals. And we can build together, right? Like, we want all of these things. And we want to feel as I said at the beginning of this episode, free and easeful and valued. But where we, I guess where we stop the conversation, it kind of gets cut short, is then asking ourselves, well, how am I being free? How am I being easeful? How am I valuing myself? Who am I being in these scenarios and in these relationships that would allow me to experience what it is I keep saying that I most want to experience? And that is really hard to come and, I guess, to confront, which is the fact that there's no blueprint. There's no like exact plan for how to do that because we're all unique individuals. We all have unique lives and work and relationships. So there's not like some like off the shelf template that you can just check down a bunch of boxes and be like, this is what I do to like be this kind of different person. What it actually requires is a great deal of energy, creativity, and courage to open yourself up to a decision. Because this is where things break down, y'all, right? We have to take things a step further and ask ourselves, who am I being? And then you have to say, okay, well, maybe I've taken a moment to examine who I've been in and who I'm being is not matching up with what I say I want to experience. Okay, cool. That's life. That's growth. That's a wonderful thing for you to even be engaging in this exercise is a beautiful, admirable thing. But then we have to take it another step forward and say, well, then what's the decision that I have yet to make, I've been avoiding making, I don't want to look at, I don't know how to make, that feels too scary to make, that I thought I kind of made, but I didn't really make. What is the actual decision that I have to make to begin this process of being different? And identifying what that decision is can feel also confronting and difficult. It can feel like kind of murky, especially when you're exploring these things by yourself. But the decision is always very simple. It's stop doing this, start doing this. It's say yes to this, say no to that. It's black and white and cut clear. We try to make these half-baked decisions or these half-assed decisions that are not really decisions. And we keep telling ourselves, well, like, well, you know, I want to be the kind of mom who sets a great example for my daughters to, you know how to like set boundaries and to take care of themselves or whatever, right? And I kind of did this one thing one time where I like a sprinkling, a smattering here and there, or only in this one arena of my life, am I exercising this skill for myself to set this example, to actually model this for them. But I haven't decided that I am now the kind of person who just does this. So I'll give a personal example, right, for myself. One of the things that I never saw my mom do growing up was have like a consistent like self-care regimen, not even like, you know, I know some people saw their moms, you know, I think about those 80s and 90s moms with the like pearlescent or like that deep red kind of nail polish coming out the nail shop, like every week or every other week, whenever you go to your nail shop or the hair shop or the hair salon or whatever, or even just having like a home like cadence around a regular washing routine. All I saw growing up was sacrifice. I felt very taken care of as a child. My mom was making sure, you know, my hair was laid and I would, my, you know, nails were and everything was like manicured and clipped, not like a spa like medicure, but, you know, like clipped and filed and clean, right? Like my shit was together. My knees were greased to the gods, honey. Like I remember I went to Catholic school for first through third grade, right? Only little black girl in the entire building, K through 12, only little black girl. And I remember going to mass and we'd have these kneelers down in the pews, right? When we do our different prayers. And every time I get up, I would have to rub the little leather on the pew to rub out the Vaseline spots because I was a moisturized child. I was thoroughly greased up every day before school, every day of my life, right? So I was taken care of. All of those key indicators in terms of like, is your child, you know, taken care of. I had vegetables with every meal. My mom would swing us through McDonald's and then we would come home and she would pop some green beans on the stove because she always wanted us to make sure that we had, like, these are the kinds of things I saw her do for me. And now I know how to do those things for my children, right? I can pick and choose what it is, but I did not see how she took care of herself. I did not see how she invested in her own personal girlfriend relationships. I did not see because she put us before herself. And I thank God for that woman. And this is absolutely no strike against her. She did. My mother was an incredible and is an incredible mother in person. And I get to evolve and do more than that. I get to, you know, take it to the next level. And for me, a big part of that is showing my daughter that I know how to take care of myself too. I want to model that. Like, where is the balance? Where, yeah, your hair may not be perfect every day, but that is also because I'm watching mommy go to do her workout class. I'm watching mommy go and hang out with her friends sometimes. Mommy is like showing me what it looks like to have a regular like nail routine or whatever, the thing that makes me feel good, right? That I do those things for myself. She knows when I have my little appointments and things like that. And so finding like, you know, there's never like this perfect balance that's ever in place, right? But finding some harmony in that. And I had to decide that I'm the kind of woman who does this. Sometimes I think we think about like the logistics and the tools and the habits. And like those rituals are really important. You can't just make a decision and have no rituals to like support the decision. You have to have those rituals, right? You have to have habits that you begin to build. If y'all have never read the book Atomic Habits, I think it's an incredible book to read to like break this down, how to begin new habits for yourself. But it's not just the habits alone. It is, who do I believe myself to be embark upon changing my behaviors, to embark upon exceeding what it is that I want to experience in my work and in my life, right? So I'm talking about, as one example for mother. The other thing I want to talk about, I'm going to stick with motherhood for a little bit because this is just like on my mind. I was solo parenting with the kids this past weekend, so I had like a lot of mommy time. And my daughters actually commented on this, and I've spoken about this publicly before somewhere. I don't know. Maybe I was like speaking at a conference. And I said, you know, it's really hard for me to cry in front of people like that. I'm not the girl who will like, I cry. Like, I don't have like a bunch of repressed emotion where it's just like, oh, I haven't cried in weeks or months, years or anything like that. But to cry with others, you know, to feel safe to do that, that's really hard, like damn near impossible sometimes. And it's something that I'm trying to work on because I rarely ever saw my mom cry. So that's part of why I don't even know how to do it in front of people. And it's also become this definition of, you know, well, how am I supposed to be this pillar of strength and, you know, a place like a safe and strong, sturdy place that my child can go to if I'm crying in front of them? And I remember my daughter saying like, Mama, I remember she was crying about something. I was like, you know, baby, it's okay to cry. I'm glad that you're, you know, expressing this emotion. We name the emotion. Is it sadness or fear or whatever it might be? We go through all this. She kind of collects herself and she feels better. She's kind of moved through that emotion. And, you know, I'm professing this to her. Like, yes, baby, you get to cry. You get to cry. And she's like, but mommy, you don't ever cry. And I was like, I think that day I was like, girl, I think I cried this morning or like last night or whatever. Like, I cry all the time. She was like, I never see you cry. And I'm like, damn. So that's, I think, a great example of, you know, it's hard to build a habit around crying. It's not like, okay, well, it's Tuesday at 5 o'clock. I'm going to like go ahead and, you know, just ball out of control here or something. I don't know, you know, like, but I have to decide like, no, I'm the kind of woman. I'm the kind of mother, right? I'm talking about my mother identity in this particular scenario. I'm the kind of mother who not only tells my children that they can cry and create safe space for them to express their emotions. I show them, I model for them. Like, I put my money where my mouth is. I am that kind of woman. And so then I can place some rituals around. And this is something that I'm still working on, but I've been giving a lot of thought to. Because I cried earlier today, y'all. Like, I did. Like, I got a healthy crying habit, I guess. But I don't cry in front of my children now. Maybe see me cry like maybe once or twice ever in life. Maybe. And, you know, my baby is like, he's only one, so he's not paying attention to me yet. But they pick up on all this, y'all. And so we have to decide to be different, to be changed in order to experience the change that we want to have. And it takes so much more courage for me, in the example of crying in front of my children, for me to break down that wall and to do a thing that I have no model for, I have no example for. I actually have a lot of instinct in me to say that this is wrong, that this is wrong to cry, like that I'm actually harming my children in some way, like air quote. But there's like this instinct in me that says like, this is not okay, that this is going to, you know, somehow mess them up. I don't want them caretaking for my feelings. I don't want them, you know, and it's like, it doesn't have to be that. It doesn't have to be that. My daughter is literally asking me, where your tears at, girl? Because I never see them. Are you human? And I'm like, oh, what am I going to decide to do with that? I have to decide first to be someone who is different. I can't just like do it again. I can't set like a 4 in the evening routine for crying. Like I have to be someone who allows emotion to flow honestly. I have to be someone who decides that that is a priority and it's who I am. It's not just some things that I do, because there's also a way that we can experience each other, you know, performing shit. And it's like, that's not going to get the job done. That's not going to achieve what it is we most deeply desire to achieve. Right. Another example of this is like professionally, right? When I was talking earlier about wanting some of that freedom and that respect and that feeling valued and having more ease. Like, let's give an example, y'all. I like to tell like an actual story. When you say that I want to be the kind of leader who is, let's say, heart-centric, but clear, decisive, and firm at the same time, right? Like, I want to be someone who is human and caring, but I also want to be seen as someone who can make strong decisions, who can stand firm in what it is I say I can do, or what it is they say that I want my team to do. Like whatever it is that I say that I can be in like strong integrity with, that I am an action taker, that I am a decision maker, right? There's some strength there. There's some force there. There's some fortitude there. And I want to be like heart-centric and like calm and kind and caring over people, right? I want to make sure that I'm, you know, embracing people's full humanity as I lead. Okay. Well, we'll say that. And what tends to happen is like, especially when there's scenarios like this, where it's just like, I want to experience this sort of balance of myself in leadership, we'll tend to like naturally sway more heavily in one direction. We're trying to like account for the other side. And so it's like, okay, girl, well, if you already like run your team down and like are on their asses and like have hardcore accountability measures and you're a little bit of a micromanager, you know, like you're all business. They show up in the room and it's like, okay, great. You know, how's the weather today? Yeah, that's enough of that. Like, let's get down to business. Let's chop, 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 chop. Then it's like, well, you're not really seeking. You already know how to do that part. You're trying to add in a new expression of yourself. And that requires you not just to do some different things. You can't just say, okay, well, now every time we have a meeting, you know, there's going to be a 5-minute feelings moment. You can do stuff like that. But if you arrive to that 5-minute feelings moment the same stoic hard ass that you've always been, what do you think the outcome is going to be, right? Nobody is going to have a positive experience of your leadership because it's going to feel awkward, performative. And sometimes these things feel awkward in the beginning because we're trying on new things. That's totally fine. But what I'm saying is there's a difference between awkwardness because you're like stumbling through something awkwardly, and there's awkwardness because you're clearly performing something that your heart is not in because you have not decided yourself to be different. Being different requires a great deal of vulnerability. I don't care what it is that we're talking about. Even on the flip side of the case, right? I said that sometimes we want this sort of balance of leadership. And it's like someone who is like, okay, well, I am super heart-centric. I am the lovey-dovey leader. I'm the person that's like, you know, bring your mama to the family function. And I want to know, and we're all besties. And like, I know everybody's birthdays. And I do, you know, I do all the things. I show up like I am naturally mushy-gushy, lovey-dovey. Like, that's not a problem for me. Where I have a problem is when it's time to like drop that gavel. You know what I mean? When it's like, I need to be firm, direct, clear. There is something that you're doing that is not okay. That is not in alignment with the way that we do business around her, with the way that operations need to function, that there is something that is that is off. And I'm just like not saying anything about it. I am keeping it to myself because I'm more concerned with hurting feelings than I am with hurting my business. I'm not able to like separate that mushy-gushy part from, you know, certain moments where it's like, well, that is not what needs to lead here. And it takes a great deal of vulnerability for you to open yourself up to like, I actually have to give this person like critical feedback, and I can't mince my words and say it kind of like, well, you know, I really love what you did in that meeting the other day. I thought it was like really brave and like beautiful and courageous, but like maybe we can try on different ways. You start giving people feedback like that from this, again, this like purely lovey-dovey, you're not going to get the results you want. It's very murky. It's very unclear. What is it? Did I do something wrong? It sounds like you're happy. So I think I'm just going to kind of mostly keep doing what I've been doing because I'm not clear, because you're not giving me that concision, that directness that people need. And that requires a lot of vulnerability for you to open yourself up to being different like that, because part of what comes up is like we have all these feelings associated with our actions. So again, if I come back to my, you know, my motherhood story around like crying in front of my kids, I had this story that like, you know, this is going to make me seem less safe to them. Like this is going to make them feel as though they have to emotionally caretake for me if I even allow them. And it's like, I have to confront all of those feelings, all of those stories. And let me tell you, there's a baseline of therapy here that is undeniable. So therapy, coaching, whoever you are working with that helps you see yourself better than you can see yourself. Like we cannot see ourselves very accurately. That's just the truth of humanity. If you have not come around to understanding that, then like, please take heed of what I'm trying to say right now. Like it is so critical that we begin to understand this. You will be walking around with so many blind spots, so many voids and gaps and room for like reorienting and reframing that can lead to so much more fullness and richness and impact in your life and in your work. So I want to make sure I note that there is a baseline of a lot of not just like self-reflection, just me and my journal. Like, no, like I work with and talk to a lot of people. I have worked with a therapist, multiple therapists over the years, multiple coaches over the years. I keeps me somebody, at least one, but oftentimes two or three at a time. Okay, because I don't like walking around blind. I don't like sitting and stewing in old behaviors and old identities for more than I need to, right? Move through these cycles quick. So anyway, y'all, what was I talking about? So going back to that example of like, I have to open myself up to confronting that story. And part of me confronting that story is like kind of understanding a little bit of where that comes from, which is why the coaching and the therapy and the things like that are really useful. But you can begin to at least see a little bit of like, oh, there is a story here. There are like real fears that arise in me. And that's why I'm avoiding this behavior. So if you put yourself back in to your leadership position at work in this, like, I'm scared to give feedback, or I don't like, I know that my feedback is not that direct or effective. And all of the different things that are getting in the way of that, we have to confront those things first. And they are personally can make you feel like a lot of shame, or confusion, or like you don't have it together, or maybe you're not enough after all, or like, you know, like all of this stuff can get drummed up. And we have to be okay with that, because that's the only way, the only way is through. I forgot, there was some coach who said that to me forever ago, and I 100% wholeheartedly believe that. The only way to is through, and we can't get through unless we are willing to be cracked open and to be changed. We have to really look at ourselves and be willing to be different with how we feel about things, with how we react to things, with how things settle in our gut, right? Like, otherwise you can't make new decisions in the moment. You can't do new things if you don't feel yourself like open and willing to be different. Okay. The last thing I also wanted to share, I guess, like the last kind of story, because I mentioned marriage earlier in this conversation around wanting change, but not necessarily being willing to be changed, or like recognizing that you have to be changed in order to have this change. So I had a real like heart to heart with my spouse, and we were talking about a mode of communication that we have historically not been great with. There's like a lot of like logistical planning stuff. It's a skill set that we've realized, especially this last year and a half in particular, that we've had to build. Things are different when it's just like you and another person willy-nilly out here just kind of figuring it out. You don't have, you know, kids or anyone like caretaking for, like, you know, other folks in your family or community, when you're just responsible kind of for yourselves and moving through challenges and what might feel like confusing or hard. Like, you can kind of get by with less skill, with fewer tools. And I'd say two things. The more responsibility you throw into the mix, right? You're responsible for, you know, like I said, caretaking, like with other humans involved. And the bigger the dream gets, it's like anything else in life. You have to up-level the skill. And there could be a lot of shame around, like, well, why don't I have this together? Or like, you know, why don't I already know how to do these things? And it's like with everything else I've been talking about here. It's like when we're trying to break the mold and we're trying to do something new, it's usually the stuff that's hard for us to do new is because we haven't been shown how. We don't have models for this. And so we're figuring out how to make it up. And you know, I think that's a big part of what makes change so hard. It makes us so resistant to it. Cause it's like, well, I don't have that well-worn, you know, like neural pathway, like that groove that just I can fall back into and do the things I know how to do because it's been modeled for me. I've been practicing it for years, or, you know, it's just like a back pocket kind of experience of myself. I don't have to reach for new things, you know, with our eyes closed out in the dark, which is what it can kind of feel like when you don't have, again, a model or an example, or it's just years of experience doing a thing in a certain way, which is very much tied to years of experience or a model for being a certain kind of person, right? And so anyway, we bump up against this, and there's like this old, my husband actually named it, which was like really good. And that, you know, that man, anyway, it's a separate conversation. There's just such wonderful, he contributes a lot, you know, and his own personal growth to our household. And I'm grateful, thankful for that, like deeply. And he named that like, oh, this seems like it's connected to this old power dynamic thing that has been in existence. And we've like kind of snuffed it out, I would say, in like certain areas of our relationship where like when we were dating and things like that, where it was just like really tough that we had to work through. And it's like, oh, this is a new area where it's showing up in this different way. So one of the things that if y'all have been kind of following along this past year or two, since I got pregnant, we and Brian started doing these following along on Instagram, because not everybody's listening on Instagram right now. We've been doing these family offsites. We need to schedule one for this winter quarter, but I've got to figure out when we're going to do that. I've got to talk to him about that actually. But we've been doing these family offsites like quarterly-ish. And it's a time for us to kind of get away because we recognize we needed to like get into like the same way that a company needs its own like offsites and retreats to get into big picture thinking, and then to drill down into like, what are the actual steps? Like, where are we headed? What do we want most? Where are we today? What's in the way? What do we need to, you know, clear space for? Like all of that stuff, right? And so that has helped us a great deal with our logistical management and planning, and for like bigger picture vision around like money and retirement and all things like that, right? I have a highlight reel on my Instagram page if you want to check that out. That's all about the family offsite. You can see my whole process. There's even a spreadsheet that's linked that we used, I think, the last offsite. A lot of people have really loved this. I know a lot of couples have, like, speaking of modeling, created these for themselves and modeled their own personal family offsites after ours. And so it's the gift that keeps on giving. Please feel free to check out the highlights. So anyway, we had figured a lot of things out there, and we're building this new habit. One of the things that came out of our last offsite was that like we need like a weekly standing meeting. And this was Brian's idea, where we can touch base at the top of each week and say, okay, like, let's just look at our calendars, because so much friction in our relationships period comes from all of the things that we've never had time to just say. And for us, it's like, usually it's like a 15-minute meeting. Sometimes we need to talk a little bit longer if something opens up. But usually we pop in 10, 15 minutes, bang, bang, bang. Hey, I've got this call on this time. I'm going to need, you know, to use this space on in this way. Can you pick up the kids for this thing? Like, we kind of run through our weeks. We'll go out like at least for that full week. But sometimes we'll go into like the next couple of weeks, especially if it's like, you know, there's a few things going on that we want to get ahead of. And it has been amazing for helping to reduce our day-to-day friction around who is doing what and why and where this is. And I didn't know where this was happening or whatever, you know, think like just feeling caught off guard by things. So we have this ritual in place, right? And it's really helped support the logistical management of our lives and household. One of the things that we realized in this conversation, where again, I got pretty emotional. I mentioned that earlier in the episode, because it was stirring up like all this like not enoughness stuff from my past that had nothing to do. And I know that, like I named that. I was like, this is like pushing my not enough button, which I know so many high achievers, we have that button, right? But sometimes you don't realize like what's being triggered or that it's being triggered, you know, period. And it took us having this conversation for me to realize like, oh, this is part of that. And so what we realize is that like we have to decide two things. One, we need another process. We need to do something different to help us become more, there's two things, I guess. Yeah, I said that. To have a space to actually create vision for short-term things. We've been talking like 5, 10 years out, but sometimes it's like you know, the vision for next summer or the vision for the holiday break or the vision for, you know, like these like smaller, medium sized ticket items that are happening with our family that we're holding individual vision for, not just plans and logistics and like week to week tactics and what's happening this month is this week or whatever. It's like, oh, there's a desire that you have for this season to exist in this way or for you to have this experience. And we haven't created space when those kind of seasonal moments are happening to say, well, this is the vision that I have, right? For us, we were just talking about the holiday season and recognizing like we come from completely different backgrounds, completely different households, completely different norms. And then we're just completely different individuals. How many times can I say completely? I almost tripped over that word about 5 times. And that means that we're going to have a different set of assumptions and desires and visions based off of what we did have or didn't have growing up and what we do want or don't want for our kids and what we do, you know, like, and so we've been talking like at this very logistical level, we realize we have to become, come on, bring it back to the message, more in sync as visionaries, as co-visionaries, right? And so that was the suggestion that I made for us to try on something new going forward to speak at this like vision level. And that again, I told you, I broke down, I was crying and stuff, upset about this. That requires some vulnerability for me to like be open about and to even get to the fact that like, oh, I'm like, this is what actually what's going on for me. There's like this undercurrent experience here that has to have space to be named, right? I'm going to bring this all back to like a final point at the end here. But I had to have space, first of all, to safe space to explore and name this thing out loud. I had to then decide or like recognize like, oh, this is hitting a sore spot for me. And I had to decide, am I going to open myself up to this or am I going to stay surface level or hide or do something else? Right. Are we going to be avoidant or are we going to be vulnerable? Are we going to have courage in that moment, which sometimes we're too tired. Sometimes we don't have it. Sometimes we're too scared, and that's all fine. But it's about, you know, recognizing that there is a way to come back. There is a way to engage and at this level with ourselves when we want to experience something different. And for me, specifically for me, but for both of us, there's like a way in that we were experiencing each other and our partnership all the, over these seasons that was like, it was not giving what we want. Neither one of us wanted to give, you know? And so you have to make that decision. And then you have space to be creative and set up, like, what is a new habit that needs to be built? What is a ritual? What is a process we want to put in place? There has to be some, I'm calling all of that stuff like rituals. Like if there's a process or a habit or a, you know, like something that has to be set up or put in place that needs to exist now, ritual. There's a thing that now exists that becomes a ritual that supports the decision because I have decided I want to be different. I can't just say like, I want this season to happen differently. No, who am I going to be to enable that? Who am I going to be to show up in conversation to commit to if I say we need to have this seasonal kind of, you know, conversation or whatever, and I'm going to like co-lead on that. Like, what am I going to bring to that conversation? What am I going to bring to the setup of that process? Where is my integrity going to be? I have to be the kind of woman who thinks that these things, who believes that these kinds of things are of utmost importance to the health, peace, ease, fun for my household, right? And for my relationship. I have to say that that is a priority. I have to believe that is who I am, that I'm the kind of person who upholds these things. And then I get to move differently. Then I get to move differently. So I want to, one thing I want to name in all of this, which I haven't explicitly talked about, but it came up there in that last part, is you have to have the safe and courageous space to confront this stuff. You have to have the space, and it's not just any kind of space. That's why I say safe, courageous, supportive space to confront this stuff. Because if you're going about your daily life, especially for those of y'all out here who are listening to me, who my message, you know, resonates with you, or to whom my message resonates, I'm trying to get my grammar together here, I don't know. You're going. You're not idle. You're not the kind of person whose brain ever shuts off. You're constantly having new commitments, new ideas, new things you're pushing forward, new things that you want to explore. All stuff is just rolling, right? Even when you stop and pause, like, I forgot to tell you about a new habit I've actually started. I've taken up journaling because I've decided that I am not the kind of woman who brings technology to bed. This has been going on for about 2 weeks, y'all. So, you know, stay with me, but I'm in it, right? I also decided about 3 months ago, I guess it's been now, maybe four, I don't know, that I'm the kind of woman who prioritizes her health. And one of the things that was really important to me, which is like, and I'm talking about like my body chemistry, was to really cut down on caffeine, because I was like, I keep asking these health professionals, my acupuncturist, I talked to like a holistic kind of doctor, I forgot they're a functional medicine doctor. I've spoken to like, you know, and it's just like basic understanding. But for me, it was like, hey, so one of the things you should consider is to like cut down on this caffeine. And I wasn't having that much. I only drank like one cup of coffee a day. So in my mind, I think I've been fighting against the advice, because it's like, but I'm not even drinking that much. I don't even have that much caffeine. I only have like a cup a day. It's no big deal. It's no big deal. What's the problem? But everyone was saying, hey, baby, for you, it's a big deal. So you can keep pretending to be someone else, or you can decide who you are going to be with this and choose something new. And so for me, you know, that was switching to tea. So I drink green tea in the morning, either a matcha or a jasmine. Okay, so that's one example. The other thing I was going to talk about was my new bedtime habit. I have been struggling with this forever, honey. You know, the thing that I actually, like a term that I learned, oh gosh, am I going to say it right? A term that I learned about maybe like in the last year or so sometime on the internet was revenge scrolling, or like, yeah, I guess that's about right. Like this happened to me once I became a mom, because it was like, I feel like my energy is like, I have all these things I have to do all day. Now to take care of this kid and like family stuff, whatever, like everything is. And I was like, I just want time like I had in my 20s just to veg out. Like, well, I don't want to think about anybody else. But I'm also tired. And it's like, girl, you need to go to sleep. But I'm on my phone. Sometimes I'm just like Netflix and chilling. Sometimes I'm scrolling on social media. Sometimes I'm like actually like trying to learn something off of a YouTube video and like getting ideas. Like I'm just doing too much. The fact of the matter is I'm supposed to be asleep. Instead, I'm revenge scrolling because I'm trying to take revenge out on my day and having to be a responsible adult with this, the new look of life. And so this has become a habit of mine over these last few years. My daughter's 6, so you know, definitely in the last 5-6 years for sure. And I had actually a great coaching conversation, Safe Courageous Space, with a woman who is a coach, a fantastic coach herself. It was like this kind of random coffee date. We were kind of put in touch by a mutual friend. And we just started talking about different things that I want. And this was like a thing that came up. And I made the decision that day. I was like, oh, I just need a trigger. The book, again, Atomic Habits, really helps you with that. I just need a trigger. And for me, it was like, I'm no longer the kind of woman who brings technology to bed. Because I knew that like, if I just don't have the phone in the bed, I won't do the scrolling. And I don't know, I've tried versions of this in the past. Y'all, I feel like I'm going on such a tangent, but I hope somebody's getting value off of this. I've tried different things in the past and it's never clicked. It was just like, girl, you know, put your phone away in the downstairs drawer. You know, you put your phone away in the da-da-da-da-da. And I don't know why, but I guess that's the stakes have felt higher. I feel more like mature and ready. I don't know, but it clicked for me this time. And now my charger, it lives. I have like a little walk-in closet. I have a little bench in there. I mean, like a stool, not a bench. I don't have like I'm not Mariah Carey. Okay. So I have like a little like stool in my closet, and that's where my phone goes at bed. And the thing for me is this, is like, I didn't want to feel restricted. I'm really talking y'all through this, but I really hope it's valuable to somebody else, because I know a lot of us struggle with this. I didn't want to feel so restricted that it was just like at 7 o'clock, the phone goes into the, or 8 o'clock, whatever time, it goes into this secret drawer and it's locked away downstairs forever. Like a big part of my identity, it hinges upon independence and freedom. And if I'm doing a thing that feels like it steps on that value or those values of mine, I'm not going to do it. Because it's like, no, you're not going to tell me what to do. I'm free. I do what I want to do, right? Even though I'm the one telling myself what to do. And so I found this happy medium, and it's also partially, I think, the way our home is set up now, where it's like, okay, my phone is just right there in the closet and I can look at stuff as much as I want to before I go to bed, but I can't be in the bed. Guess what that has done for me? Two things. Number one, I don't want to just be sitting on my floor on my phone because I'm 40 and my bones, no. So the amount of time that I'm spending on the phone before bed has cut down, just because I just don't want to be sitting. It's not comfortable. It's cozy in the bed, which is why you sit there and you scroll. And next thing you know, like hours have passed, right? But if you take that comfort away, you don't want to scroll as long. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to put this to bed now. I guess three things. Number two, I have like a nice backlog of books from being pregnant. And I was way, way too sleepy. I should say pregnant and like immediately after having the child, where I was like way, way too sleepy to read. I get through like literally a paragraph and pass out. So I have like an exciting selection of a couple books in rotation on my nightstand now that I feel excited to read, because that's what I do when I get in the bed. And then number three, because I'm on the floor, I decide to bring my little yoga mat into the bedroom, and I keep it in the corner now rolled up. And I just do stretches, which is another habit I've been dying to develop ever since somebody told me that RuPaul, tell your friends, I guess on his masterclass, shared that like one of his secrets to longevity and, you know, I guess strength and mobility and just being able to walk in the 7-inch heels of it all, like, is because he stretches every single night. And I was like, wow, that makes so much sense. And I'm really feeling it in my body. So now I have a nightly stretching routine just because I have to be on the floor with my phone, because I don't allow my phone in the bed. I don't allow technology on my nightstand. Like when I go to bed, if I have my phone or my iPad, like it has to go somewhere else. It cannot be in the bed with me and it cannot be on the nightstand. And I feel like it's not taken so far away from me because, you know, if you wake up in the middle of the night and have to use the restroom, I'm walking over that way. That's where our closet is, right next to the restroom. I have to walk over that way anyway. So I feel like I have this freedom if I need to check my phone for some reason in the middle of the night. But it's like, girl, you grew up in the 80s and 90s. You didn't have no phone. Like, you're fine. Like, what did you used to do before you had an iPhone? Sleep. Nothing. Stare at the wall. Like, you didn't have this as an option, right? And you did just fine. You did just fine. And I will say that, like, this is another example of, again, I had to make myself vulnerable to like the embarrassment, the shame of something as simple as putting your phone away. I'm a grown ass woman, but I had to like share that with somebody in some safe space and then have, you know, be open to this opportunity to be different with myself, to choose a different version of myself. And then to like make a plan that actually makes sense for me and set up a ritual that actually paid off in dividends, because now I have a stretch routine just by function of having to be on the floor with my phone, right? And so with all of that, like, I guess what I was getting to is like, you also begin to attract what you want. You're not always actively creating the things that you want to see, like the changes that you want to take place. You begin to attract. So like, this is very small. And it's also like a little tied into Big Brother and the technology and how they're always listening. But I choose to see this particular thing as a part of what I'm also attracting, which is, you know, I feel like I've been getting served like new information, whether it's on social media or just in conversation or like podcasts and things like that, around like really important things that I'm thinking about in terms of like my health and well-being and family. Because it's like I've become this person. I am becoming this person. Right? We're always in the becoming of it. Who prioritizes these things? Who doesn't bring her technology to bed? Who insists upon, you know, if I'm going to be on the floor, I might as well bring that yoga mat. Like, I just, it's like there. So I just do it. Right? And so now I'm like, I'm learning about like remineralizing my body. And like, I don't know, these different things are taking shape. And it is brick by brick. It is piece by piece. And these rituals are really, really important. But I cannot stress enough that all of these things first take root with some courageous, vulnerable conversation in a courageous and safe space. We have to come to terms with who we want to be. And that means we have to confront who we have been. And that can feel hard and icky and all kinds of things. But that's where it starts. That truly is where it starts. And that is how we can begin to be different in ourselves, with ourselves, to ourselves, before we ask the world to be different for us, before we ask our circumstance to treat us differently. How are you treating yourself? Who are you treating? Do you even know who you're treating? Who are you, right? Who are you being? So again, I say this as somebody who is 40 years old and just figured out how to get the phone out of her bed. And I've been doing it for 2 weeks. I'm not sitting on a high horse, but I want to report live for how these things are beginning to take shape for me. And again, a lot of the other things I shared earlier in the episode are like longer lasting. I have like, you know, different proof points for and having these courageous conversations and opening up our ability to make a decision to be different. But it means the world. It can mean everything. It can mean everything to how you're experiencing your work, your life, your relationships, your everything, your money, which is another thing I'm working on. So as always, dang, this is longer than I thought it was going to be. I hope that this episode really serves someone. I hope that it meets the right person at the right time, just when you needed to hear it. I know we went on some tangents. We went on a few rides, but sometimes I just feel called to like make sure I keep sharing and not cut things off, because I get responses. And thank you all. Thank you all when you send me text messages after listening to our episodes. Thank you so much for dropping in my DMs. Thank you so much for sending me like the random email at ambition@MoniqueArshields.com about these episodes, the letting me know like that these tangents do mean something to you, that like the words that I'm sharing, the experiences I'm sharing, especially when they're raw and live and real like this, is what I like to do when I come on and do a live podcast episode. Thank you for letting me know what does matter and keeping me going. Like, this has been like such a labor of love. And oh my gosh, I almost forgot. As I close out this episode, one of the other things that I am trying to see change, be change, who I want to be differently or how I want to be differently on this podcast is also sharing my needs. Oh my gosh, this feels so connected to what I was talking about before about crying in front of my children. Wow. It's all connected, y'all. But me feeling like I need to take care of my audience, that I need to take care of y'all grown people, y'all grown independent, whole and creative and resourceful people, by not sharing what's on my heart and something that I'm like thinking about and wanting and desiring because it feels, air quote, needy or inappropriate or something like that. I'm just like, why would I place that on this? So anyway, this is me being different. I want to let you know two things. Number one, in 2024, my team is expanding. The business is growing. I feel really like scared and excited about that, as growth and change will do. This is not like a job posting or anything like that, but I just want to make sure that I'm putting it out there. It's something that I've kind of kept like to myself and not wanted to say out loud, I guess. And I'm beginning to like do that for the first time. So this is not something I typically do, but I will be hiring in 2024. And I'm thrilled about it. So anyway, I'm just putting it out there. Thank you for holding space for that. And if you want to reach out about it, that's fine too. I don't know. Again, there'll be something more concrete to come, but I just want to put it out there. Okay, so that's number one. Number two is, speaking of 2024. Okay, y'all. So at the beginning of this year, I said that I really wanted to do 1 to 2 speaking engagements. This is part of my goals. And I did that. And it was specifically like live speaking engagement, because I've been on the cameras, on the Zooms a lot, especially since I basically launched the online component of my business in 2020 when I had to. And so I've gotten really comfortable with that. And I used to do a lot more live events, especially over the summertime. I worked with these like beautiful CEO retreats. I love to come and like facilitate these really intimate spaces. And like, anyway, I've been able to do some of that a little bit more personally lately. And I did do a couple of like live speaking events from stages, and I thought I was going to do a lot more of that. But what's come to me is that the magic really comes in these intimate group spaces with women. And so I just want to put out there that if you are in like rare air with rare women, especially women of color, who are trying to find or already have a gathering space that is intimate and that is for you to finally have space to be courageous and to be vulnerable and to be real. Because a lot of us are busy being really like shiny right now and pretending like our shit is together when it's just not. Holler at me. If you are like already a friend in my network, or if you're not, like, just holler at me. I want to do, you know, a select few of these kinds of events next year. I'm not going to wear myself out, because that's not the kind of business I'm building. That's not the kind of woman I am. I decided that a long time ago. But yeah, I just want to open up the doors for that conversation. Again, closed mouths don't get fed. And I want to be the kind of woman, the kind of business owner who is not afraid to speak her visions out loud, even if I don't have like some perfect, you know, polished presentation for you at this point in time to express any of that. So anyway, this episode has been longer than I anticipated, longer than I expected. Thank y'all again and again and again and again for your support this podcast this year. It has been like, it has blown my mind, honestly. And I will talk to you next time. Y'all, truly, thank you for listening to Ambition Without Compromise. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts so more women like you can discover us. I'd also love to engage with you more real time. If you're on social media, come follow me on Instagram at Monique R. Shields. Don't forget that R. You can also access my newsletter at MoniqueRShields.com/newsletter. to receive bi-weekly gems on the best and most impactful lessons I'm learning in my many roles in both life and as a coach to powerhouse women across the country. Again, that's MoniqueRShields.com/newsletter to sign up. Talk to you soon.